Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another edition of Hockey the Podcast. Great to have you on board. I'll tell you what, last couple of weeks, every time I've introed the show, I've always gone, welcome to a special edition of Hockey the Podcast. But it pretty much applies to every single show that we've had in the last couple of months. So I think in future, if it's a really crappy episode, I'm going to say welcome to a normal edition of Hockey the Podcast, because the norm these days is really, really special. And joining me, as always, is my partner in crime, Tyron Jabu Barnard. And Ty, we do have a very, very special guest joining us as well.
Yeah, Derek, good evening to you. What a special day it is. It's always great when we get to talk about hockey with 30 days out from the Olympic Games. We are just a week or so past the Euro Championships. And of course, there is a little bit of focus going on indoor hockey right now around the world, because the last competitors of the Indoor Hockey World Cup will be decided this weekend in America. It is the Pan Am Indoor Hockey Cup, where the last World Cup finalist will be chosen, 12 nations. And of course, if you're talking Indoor Hockey World Cup, there is only one story that comes to mind, and that story comes from the 2015 World Cup in Leipzig, when the Netherlands were victorious, going all the way through and winning the final against the odds and lifting the title as world champions. And it was an amazing fairy tale story. And to that, we are joined by the captain of that team, a PSI all-star, the Amsterdam women's first team coach, Robert Tiggs. Tiggs, welcome, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, welcome. What a nice introduction. yeah, good to be in the show. I'm really looking forward. Talking hockey, nice.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Tiggs, I got to meet you through PSI when you came out here to South Africa a few times. In fact, so much so that South Africa was almost your home away from home. Look, I mean, obviously, indoor hockey does not have the same profile as outdoor hockey, but there's no doubt in my mind, having watched you play, your name is right there with the elites of indoor hockey. What is the indoor passion that drives you?
My passion for the game started when I was, I think, 21, and I just fell out of the boat. I don't know how to tell, but I didn't get selected anymore because of age for the under 21 outdoor team, because here in the Netherlands as well, the outdoor hockey obviously is more important for everybody. But I started playing the national team because I wanted to stay in the picture for the national outdoor team, but I got hooked by the game so hard because it's so fast, it's so electric. I mean, you're in full action all the time, running forward, trying to do my thing, scoring goals, but I also had to run back, which wasn't the case in outdoor hockey all the time. The action, you know, the goals, everything, defensive, offensive, everything's in it. And I think it's very attractive to play, and it's also very, very attractive to watch if you see a good game.
Yeah, I am very much in the same boat, Robert, because I was introduced to hockey via indoor, and that was via Tyron. So that was about two, three years ago in Durban. Was an indoor competition featuring South Africa, Botswana, and Zimbabwe. And I had the immediate impression as well. I said, how is this sport not more popular? All you need are eyes to see it, to realize how good and how an entertaining sport it is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, it's full action, like 40 or 60 minutes, depends on playing time. But I think, Ty said, I came to Cape Town the first time on my own. And after that, we had some series going on between the All-Stars and the South African team. And what Simon is doing there, he's creating the buzz around it as well, and that makes it so spectacular. And that's, well, I think the game, and obviously what the opportunities that you have during the game, but also around the game, make it way more spectacular. Make more spectacular than an than an outdoor game. I've been watching the Euros recently, and some games I just stopped watching because it was quite boring. But it doesn't happen a lot with an indoor game. So it's full on action, and it goes and it goes and it goes until like all the dust is gone, and then okay, what's the final score, you know? So yeah, I think it's an amazing game, and like I said, I fell in love with it when I was around 21. I always played it, but you know, making it to the highest level, reaching the level of playing World Cups, you know, good crowds. We played in Poland for, I think, in Poznan in 2011. There were like 5,000, 6,000 spectators. The same in Leipzig, especially during the final and the semi-final against Germany. And like I said, you know, it was 4-2 up, 4-4 with 60 seconds to play. They scored two goals within 60 seconds. They could have scored the winning one even a second later, and then shootout, you know, buzzing crowd. It was amazing, spectacular.
Yeah, speaking of crowds, I mean, since you obviously got to play in some really cool crowds in South Africa as well, PSR.
Definitely.
I mean, was there any year when you came out, or any of those All-Stars teams that stand out as your favorites or your best memories?
I think, I don't know the place, I think it was Maritzburg where we went. It was quite outside of Cape Town, where it was a smaller court, but the crowd, it was packed. The full place was packed. I mean, everybody was sitting around the boards and everywhere and behind the goals. There was no single seat open anymore. So that was one of my better memories. And
yeah, I was at that game. I remember it was at St. Anne's College. And I actually because I was there on a media pass, but there was no space, I ended up actually sitting on the bench next to you and John McEnroe.
Yeah. I can remember. So that was a great memory. But yeah, obviously most of the games, I think for me as well, like a dream came true when we had, we had some good All-Star teams, but I think there was one particular year where we had like the elite of the elite, with Mo First, with Benny West, with Timo West. And besides the indoor court, also very nice guys to hang around with. So I think that year, that edition was very special to me, especially to see and to play with Mo First, for example. This guy, he's like a living legend for, well, hockey in general, you know, but also because of his his awareness, him showing up there, and the rest of the team. I think that was one of the best crowds ever, and you know, we really made a nice entertainment game out of it. I can remember Mo giving his stick to a young kid to play for a couple of seconds. He grabbed his stick back when he saw there was an opportunity, and he scored an electric goal in the top corner, you know, killing two guys. But I think, Ty, I've been there for, I think, 8 or 9 times. And probably in December, I will be back for maybe number 9 or 10. And actually, all of them were in front of fantastic crowds, amazing people, amazing kids, parents. You know, the organization is perfect. So, yeah, I mean, the experiences there are, I wouldn't say they're similar to a World Cup final, but they are close to it. And for an event like PSI, that's awesome, you know.
Yeah, and Tiggs, I mean, the question I was going to ask you is, obviously over the years you played a few different All-Stars. You played the African All-Stars, the Combined Stars, the World Stars, but you also played the South African team.
Yeah.
In your opinion, I mean, obviously in some of those early games you guys used to give the South Africans a bit of a hiding, but it started getting a bit more competitive. Which players, were there some players that stood out for you that made you think, these guys can really compete with South Africa in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and especially looking at the youngsters coming through now from the PSI program. I mean, the Kasim brothers, I think I saw the younger one. I think that's Mustafa. I think he was like the first time I was there, he was 13 or 14, maybe even younger. And yeah. I saw him play recently, and I think he played in one of the last games. I played against him, but not in an all-star game. But this guy has skills. I think his brother as well, obviously. Ryan Julius, who played in the Netherlands last year, outdoor. Also great skills, and also, you know, trying to get the best out of it all the time on every aspect, not only on the field, but also off court, you know, and his fitness and agility is insane. I think, Jethro obviously is picking up, and he's becoming a stronger leader. So I think there are definitely several guys that are growing and growing. And I think also by playing the All-Star team, they gain more tactical awareness. They gain more technical skills, you know. So I think these games really push them to get to a higher level. So I was really impressed over the years how they improved, definitely.
Rob, I'm really glad to hear that because, I mean, obviously we take a lot of pride in our sports personalities, our sports people. Now, we tend to measure, understandably, we're a massive rugby-loving nation. And we tend to measure years by Rugby World Cups. So, of course, we kicked things off in 1995. And since then, every 4 years, we've enjoyed a Rugby World Cup. We won three of them. But then there's certain years that you remember, like, we didn't do so well. And you look back at 2015, and that was a year where we made it to the semis, the Springboks, and they lost to the All Blacks in the semifinals. 2015, not so big a year for South Africa, big year for the All Blacks, but also a massive year when it comes to the Netherlands and the World Cup when it comes to indoor hockey.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I think, well, like the introduction said, for us, it was a fairy tale story. I think we started off in 2008 with a group of like fanatic guys who really wanted to play. Some of them, like my own drive to go there was to stay in the picture for the outdoor team, but some of them had the same. Others were really specialistic indoor players, and they really wanted to compete. So we built it like a core team, and we were still playing in B division in the Euros then. Mm. And from there on, our story actually started, and we had a German coach coming in, Robin Rush, who was really a really nice guy, but tactical, really good. And you know, this guy you would kill for a guy like this. And so he started building and building and building. And along the way, some people, some guys retired or eventually weren't good enough anymore, because there was a bit of a buzz starting around this team. Like, okay, there's a really good focus. They're really looking forward to competing in the world top. And so we had our promotion in the Netherlands, I think in 2010. And from there on, we started to qualify for the A division, and we qualified for the World Cup 2011, and so on and so on. And eventually, 2015, we qualified, and we were convinced of being a semi-finalist team. But we never thought about defeating Germany for our home, in front of a home crowd of like 5,000-6,000 spectators cheering, screaming, and beating them by shootouts, penalty shootouts. That was insane. And the story, I mean, when you play a tournament, you know, we started off actually quite bad. I think our results weren't that good. We played a shitty game against Canada. We won them 3-1 in the last few minutes with just some individual skills. And so we struggled through the group. But at a certain point, you know, you get this feeling and you're like, okay, we're here now. We ended up number one in the group. So therefore, we had an easy opponent in the quarterfinal. Well, easy, not easy, but, you know, not the strongest one. So we played Sweden. And you start getting this belief within this team, you know, and the team started playing better. And all the tactical things were more like a routine and more like a routine all the time. So at a certain point, we were like, okay, you know, this might gonna work out. But we always, we always made it through the semifinals in the Euros as well. But always, Austria or Germany was in the way. You know, they were too yeah, top class indoor teams, and we were like, okay, that never happened and it will never happen. But during this tournament, and that was also a special role for our coach, Robin Rush, he made us believe in this thing. And obviously in 2015, it was the first and the only year where you had to play with five instead of six. And I think that was our main advantage, because with four players on the field, we always had, yeah, all the specialist guys in our team on the field. And the years before, we always had like a number 11 player or a number 12 player that had to play, but actually wasn't good enough. And this year, everything came together. Yeah, and then, you know, against Germany, our tactical plan was right. You know, I think I scored the first goal within 30 seconds, one of my best goals ever. But I mean, so this belief, it started growing and growing and growing. Well, and in the end, when you beat Germany in front of their home crowd in the semifinal, obviously you feel strong enough to play a final against Austria. You know, you're like, okay, bring this on. It's going to be a piece of cake. Obviously it was not a piece of cake, but you know, you're so super confident. And I think, it was a big compliment to my coach in that time, but also a big compliment to the team, because we were really a team. You know, it started getting closer and closer, and everybody started believing in himself and in each other. And so this fairy tale had a really happy ending. Lifting the World Cup, it was like, yeah, still the biggest highlight of my playing career. And I'm still super proud of what we did there, because in the end, it took me. I played the indoor team for like 10 to 12 years. And this was after 8 years, I think, of hard work every winter, you know, training hard 8, 9, 10 times a week, at 7 in the morning, you know, up and down to Almere. And you know, we always ended up fourth or third, maybe one time, or fifth or sixth. So it's also not that motivating, but we fought so hard, and therefore this was like, yeah, this was the best thing that could happen. And I think we deserved it only because of this effort of some of the guys like Tenro, of Nicky Leis, who were there from the start, you know, with this core team. We really started believing in reaching the top and becoming a world champion. And yeah. The best thing that happened to me in my playing career.
Yeah, I can completely understand. And, you know, you said that you targeted the semifinals. And to be fair, and no disrespect to the team, I think that was massively optimistic. You mentioned the results that you've secured in the past when it comes to the World Cup. So even the semifinals would have been a massive achievement in itself. So what was it? I think Dodgeball, the movie that said Dodgeball, an underdog story, and that can really apply to the Netherlands team in 2015. So you go through, you make the semifinals, you achieve the goal that you originally set out to achieve, and you face the likes of Förster, Timo and Benny Ves, an all-star squad. You do away with them, and then you make it to the final. Not only do you do that, and I'm talking about the team, but then personally, you go and score in the 3-2 victory.
Yeah. A nice corner. Yeah, obviously we played Austria for quite some time already during other Euro events and also during club championships, European club championships. So you know each other. And like I said, we trained so much, and our penalty corner, I think, I don't know how many, but I think it was over 100,000 pushes during my career, if it isn't more. The penalty corner was a routine, but our coach, the German guy, he said from the beginning, you have to start believing in, if you have a good goalkeeper, and well, I think Ty can confirm that Laurens played one of his best tournaments ever when we played the World Cup, and a good corner, efficient corner, can bring you titles. And this is what happened. I mean, I can remember the moment, and I was so confident, like, okay, I know this goalie, I know his weak spot, I'm super confident of my own corner, so bring it on. And yeah, like you've seen on the videos, it was exactly how we planned. And obviously super happy and a highlight for me during the final especially.
I mean, Tiggs, there's also a story that's probably not often told, but how good was the celebration that night in Germany?
it was good. I can remember until like midnight, and that's about it. no, it was awesome. I mean, I think were you there? No,
no.
I think Simon was there because that's where we met, and that's how the PSI thing got started. But I think they had this kind of club within a cave. It was underground. Typical German. And yeah, I think it was one of the best parties ever. I mean, obviously with a gold medal around your neck and drinking out of a World Cup sounds tastes really sweet. But I think a lot of teams were there. And like I said, you know, you play each other, especially the European teams. I mean, we play each other. It's always the same faces. It's Armenia from Austria. They have a lot of international players. They also play for Austria. You have the German guys that play for the club teams, and you see them during the European Championships and during the Euros for countries. So I think in the end, this party was like a real gathering of all the familiar faces. Obviously, not the usual suspects wearing the gold medal, but yeah, it's always, you know, you work hard, you work for 2 to 3 months to go to a tournament like this, and there's a lot of relief and attention relief and yeah, how do you say it? A lot of energy when a tournament is over, you know, and in the end, everybody, you know, the hockey communion, it's one big happy family. And that's what I really remember from this party, that all the teams were there, but also the Australian guys, everybody was there. Also the women's part, obviously, because it was for a men's and women's tournament. So it was a crazy party. And well, like I said, I can't remember how I got home, but I can remember some parts. And I remember that I had a big conversation with the umpire. He's one of my better friends at the moment. Lee Barron.
yeah, I know Lee. He did the African Indoor Cup in 2018 in Swakopmund.
Yeah.
Very, very good indoor hockey umpire, and probably one of the best in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Tiggs, obviously, 2015 was amazing, but then 2018 was a little bit heartbreaking because the defending champions don't automatically qualify. You guys did not have a good European championship, and it meant that you missed out on the chance of going to the World Cup and defending your title. I mean, is that something you look back at still today and think, yes, what could have been? Or are you happy with the way the script played?
No, definitely not. Only the only thing is, like I said, there was this core team that started a really long time ago. And I think from the World Cup winning team in 2015, 4 to 5 important players retired, or they got picked for the outdoor squad, which means they are not playing for indoor anymore. So I think the basic or the big chunk of the core group retired, and we started working with a younger group in 2016. And well, that was a hectic tournament. We needed a draw in our last group game. We scored a goal 10 seconds before time. We were cheering. I don't know if you know this moment. It was against the Czech team. And they took the ball. We got a penalty corner against because we were cheering on the other side, and some of our players were within the 3-meter line. They got a penalty corner, another penalty corner, a stroke, a goal. And so we went to the C pool, which means you have to play for relegation. And there, everything went wrong. So we relegated. That was also the moment when I actually retired. And in 2018, I was the assistant coach for this team. But in the end of the preparation, one of our players got picked for the outdoor team. So he was a core player in this team, and he got picked, and he left like a week before we went to Euros. So I got back into the game, and I got back from retirement and played the 2018 B division. But obviously this wasn't the tournament where you were able to qualify for the World Cup, unfortunately. So we missed out, and I think that's a big, that was a big shame. But it's also, it's a big part of a new group. Besides Nicky Leijs, Teun Roelof, but a lot of other players from the 2015 group retired or didn't play anymore. So yeah, it was like, it felt like a new beginning. And I think Nicky and Turner are still playing, and they will be joining hopefully the European Championship and the World Cup that will be held during this coming winter. I will be there as well as the assistant coach. So yeah, hopefully we are there to how do you say it, to get some revenge and hopefully yeah, do well. But like I said, we have a totally different team from the 2015 or 2019 qualifying episode.
Yeah, and obviously that did bounce back. The team has qualified, and obviously we in South Africa have seen the disappointment of good teams not qualifying with our women missing out.
Yeah.
We see this coming World Cup, I mean the Pan Am now, the Trinidad and Tobago guys are not able to go because of COVID, so they don't get to defend their title and they don't qualify.
Yeah.
Sport unfortunately is about those high moments, but also the low moments and how you bounce back. And, you know, definitely. You speak a lot about coaching. You obviously are also coaching at Amsterdam. You're coaching the women's first team. And, yeah, it must have been quite special having played in all those EHL games over the years yourself to get to coach a women's team in the first ever EHL.
Yeah, definitely. It was an amazing experience. I think this was actually the first event for me, the first few games that were really, we were really playing for something in this tournament, because obviously the year before the competition in the Netherlands was postponed due to COVID. So we didn't play any playoffs. So it was actually one of my first games with a lot of pressure on it and a must-win game. It was totally different, I can tell you. I mean, as a player, you know, you obviously live up to the moment that the EHL is coming and you play your game, but your coach is just preparing you and that's about it. And you feel excited and you want to play and you do your thing. But as a coach, it is so much more. And especially in COVID times, it was quite hectic to get to the EHL, because there were a lot of protocols, a lot of things that you had to think about. And as a coach, yeah, I mean, it was, I can tell you, much heavier than being a player and just showing up and doing your thing instead of, prepping your team for this event. But I was really proud of what we did there. I mean, obviously we left there with a bronze medal. But I think we played one of our best games of the season against Den Bosch in the semifinal. I think, especially the second and the third quarter, we were dominating this team, which has I think 9 or 10 Olympians if we see the squad now. The game was like 70 seconds too long for us, but I think we did very well, and unfortunately during the shootout series we didn't manage to win and to become the winning team. But after that, I mean, we were actually very happy with our performance, and we went through the loser game or the bronze medal game, the bronze medal game. And I think we outclassed Club Under Alster. So we really showed that we were one of the top teams there. Unfortunately, without a gold medal, but because I think if we just won the semi-final against Den Bosch, I think we definitely would have taken the gold as well. But it was a total different experience, especially after losing a semi-final game like that. I mean, how do you handle your team? What do you do? What's the vibe? How do you prep them within like 24 hours to still win a bronze medal and to be super focused to play another good game? So that's a lot of hard work, but I think we did well and we managed well. And it was great to finally see the EHL with the women's edition as well, because I think that's quite important for the sport as well, to have more equality within these events and everything around it. So it was a great experience, totally different, but still, I mean, I love to play in the highest league. I love to coach in the highest league, and games with pressure like this. Well, this is why I am in sports, and especially in the top of the leagues.
Robert, You spoke about your experience in 2015 with the World Cup victory, and you spoke about your coach, about how you would have died for him. And I'm interested to know why exactly. And now, having made the transition into coaching, and as you spoke about that performance, making it through to the semi-final with the women's side, losing unfortunately to Den Bosch, would you say that your players would say the same thing about you? Like, what makes a coach that good that you'd want to die for them?
Well, my own experience with my coach was is that we started this episode in 2008, and we grew into this 2015 fairy tale together. And I would die for him because this guy, he knew everything. He knew everything about tactics. He knew everything about technical skills, but his social skills were also phenomenal. I mean, I was so confident, but I was also feeling very how do you say this? I was so this guy, he felt like a second father to me, you know. So he was interested in everything you did, your study, your situation at home. I mean, he was like a family figure, and that's why I would say I would die for him. And you know, he knew exactly how to find the right balance between how to live for the top sport and also how to relax and be yourself. And so I think for him, he was not an older guy, but I think he was like 45. He was quite experienced. So I think he took a bit of everybody that he worked with and the guys he coached, but also the guys he was coached by. And I think for me, I'm not sure if the women that I coach would say that they would die for me. But I think that's also because I'm still a young guy. You know, I'm really fanatical and I'm totally into it. So I will always defend all my girls. But I think that I'm at the same time, I'm also that unexperienced that I can still, over focus, or, you know, I still have to learn a lot. And I don't think I made mistakes, but I think I, in some moments, focus too much on small things. But for me, when I look back at the last year, for example, COVID had quite a big influence on myself as a coach, because I was just trying to make this puzzle for every single game, instead of thinking about tactics, instead of thinking about how is everybody doing in his home situation. I was like, there was this one weekend that 2 hours before we started gathering for a game, I got a call. It was the first call that I got that day. Hi, Tix. I had a dinner yesterday and it was with this and this girl. She has a cough now, so she's going to test, which means I have to go in quarantine. Okay, well, go into quarantine then. And so you won't be playing. 2 minutes later, the next one calls. Another 2 minutes later, the next one calls. So in the end, within 2 hours before my game started, I lost 5 girls because of a quarantine. Yeah. So I had to manage 5. I had to manage to find 5 players, for example, within 2 hours before my game starts. And that was like a small summary of the season. I was so much on the COVID thing, you know, that I think that I've, well, maybe missed a few steps on the social part and also on the tactical part. But in the end, I'm super proud of what I did with my team over the years. Don't think I'm not proud or I'm not happy with what we did. But I think, you know, I have to learn a lot. And this was a good lesson for me, like, okay, how to focus on the right things in the right time. That's it. And I think the German guy, for me, he just knew how... He had like a sensor for, okay, at this moment I have to be the more the social guy. At this time, I have to be the tactical guy or the real leader, you know, who shows real leadership and has strong decisions. I think therefore, I mean, I had so much respect for him after all these years. That's why I would die for him.
Oh, man. It fascinates me to see how the level of appreciation that players have for their coaches. And it's not often the case, but when it is, you can see that it certainly does breed success. And of course, the results speak for themselves. Speaking of success and successful players, we had Avid Aguda, who was sensational, and a nice South African link as well with Ava, with Tim Drummond.
Yeah, especially with Tim. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, tell us a bit more about her leaving Amsterdam, unfortunately.
Yeah. That was, I spoke to her about it, obviously. And, I think she, after 10 years of Amsterdam, she was looking for a new challenge, you know. I mean, at Amsterdam, we always have a great squad. So she was named best player in the world twice in a row. I think if there was a third year, it could have been three in a row. So obviously, it's sorry to see her leave. But I think for her as a player, but also as a human being, she was looking for another challenge, a different kind of challenge, you know, with a team that is not in the playoffs for sure, you know, or, you know, they're really building a squad. And I think for her, it's. Yeah, a new challenge to explore herself and to explore her different skills besides her hockey skills. And I think that's for her was one of the main drivers to make this decision. And, well, I can tell you, obviously, I spoke to her like four or five times during the period where she had to decide. And I, obviously told her that I didn't want her to leave because it's one of the best players in the world. So, you definitely don't want her to leave your team. But on the other hand, when a strong player like that walks away, it also opens opportunities for the rest. So that's how I see it now, how I look at it now for my own squad for the coming years. But yeah, like I said, Ava as a person, as a top hockey person, as a top sport person, I think she's like the top of the world, you know, how she lives her sport, how her fitness is, everything about around it. I mean, she broke her wrist and 4 weeks later she played her first training again. She was so super focused to get back onto the pitch, to start playing again, to recover well, to come back stronger. I mean, that's definitely her character. And I mean, I have a lot of respect for her career and everything she did for hockey, for women's hockey, for Holland as a country, the national women's side, and also as a human being, because I mean, she's an amazing girl. And I'm not sure, I mean, maybe in the future she will end up in South Africa with Tim on her side. It's a nice country to live in, I can imagine.
You know, if she can come stay here for a couple of years, she's good enough to retire from Netherlands for a few years and then play for South Africa after that.
It sounds like a plan to me, Ty. It sounds like a plan to me.
Tiggs, obviously, bearing in mind that we're almost out of time, I wanted to ask you to pick a dream indoor team. But the caveat I'm going to give you is, apart from yourself, obviously, you'll be in the six, so you need to select five others, but they have to come from five different countries. otherwise, it was just going to be your Amsterdam team.
Yeah, or some of the All-Star guys.
Yeah.
So myself is already the first Dutch guy, or
yeah, but you're allowed. You're allowed another Dutch.
Another
guy.
Dutch guy. Okay. Oof, this is a tough one. Let me think. I think in goal. Who is the worst goalie I played against? I think the Austrian goalie. No, definitely not. Because, Benjamin Stanzel, he's in my team.
Yes.
I think... Turn Rolf obviously is my best friend and my indoor hockey buddy, but I think when I look at it now, and I think I would take Nicky Leist,
the most amazing hands ever,
because he's, I think, the most complete player out of myself, Rolf, and so Nicky Leist will definitely be in it. And I hope Tone is not listening to this podcast.
I will record a separate little clip for him and send it to him.
Okay, cool. Then I would say from Germany. Yeah. Is it Mo or is it Benny? Will you help me out?
I mean, I love Mo because of what he stands for. But is there a better indoor hockey player that I've ever seen than Benny Vess?
No, I take Benny Vess.
Yeah,
I take Benny Vess. So I have Benny Vess. I have Nicky Lyce. I have myself. I have Benjamin Stanzel. So I need a goalie from a different country. Shit. and I need another striker. What countries do we have?
Anyone from, you've got Germany. So anyone from, you've got Germany and Austria.
Yeah. Belgium. Belgium did well over the last couple of times, but I think they did well because of they were a good team. Not really.
Yeah.
Tom Bone.
Yeah, of course.
Tom Bone. I played against him. He's a great goal scorer and a good drag flick. So I think as a goal scorer, I can have him. But how's my defense then? I have Benny and I have Nicky. Stanzel on the midfield. Then I have Bone in front.
Keeper, someone from Iran or Austria or...
No, Austria.
Oh, not Austria, Australia.
Australia. Okay, come on. Who do we have here?
Poland, Switzerland.
Yeah, no. I think the Iran goalie was good, but I don't know his name.
I'll pull up the Iran goalie's name from the tournament. It was Sasan Hatami.
Never heard of him. Never, don't know his name anymore. Shit, goalie. Come on. It's hard, man.
Yeah, that when I thought about it, I thought it would, five countries would be fine. Okay, we'll allow you to have one bonus from another country.
I think that's best. Because then I will take, in his top days, I would take Laurens Goedegebuur.
Yeah, 2015 Laurens is probably the best.
I think so.
Tiggs, obviously, the other question, who, apart from Netherlands, who do you think is... going to be the team to watch at the 2022 Indoor Hockey World Cup, bearing in mind that indoor has been very, very smashed by COVID over the past 2 years.
Yeah, I think it's quite hard. I mean, I was not involved during the Euros here in 2018 or 2019. I mean, or 2020, I don't know, the 29, whatever, the last Euros. So I think still Austria is always a team to watch. I think they still have Kerper playing. I still think they have Stanzel playing. They have the Simcek guy in goal playing, and they had some good young guys coming in. So I think they are a team to watch. And obviously, Germany is always... it depends on what squad they take, but I can't imagine they would come with a B team to a World Cup. So definitely Germany as well. So I think the usual suspects, the top three. But like I said, I haven't seen a lot over the last 2 years. So maybe it's good to have another surprise like we did in 2015. Africa.
Yeah, we wouldn't mind if it was South Africa. But more importantly for us, we'd love South Africa just to get into the top six so that there's two African teams at the next one.
Yeah. Well, I think with like I said, the Kasim guys, you have a lot of guys going to the Olympics now, and they have a lot of tournament experience, the best tournament experience you can have. So if South Africa lets them play during the World Cup indoor, I mean, you have some young guys, they have electric hands, they have a tactical advantage, or like a good level through the years because of playing PSI and you know, playing or watching the All-Stars. So I think a combination of this can be really useful and might end up in a fairy tale story, ending up with the top six.
Robert, finally, I'm just on a betting website and I'm busy putting in my predictions. just a quick one. Netherlands and the Olympics, both men's and women's. Who should I go for? Can I back them to win the gold?
I think with the women, you can go for gold. With the men, I think it's a very challenging Olympic Games coming up. I think there are like six extremely good teams with Germany, Belgium, the Netherlands, India, Australia, obviously, and I saw some other outside. I was really impressed by England during the Euros. They played very well. I put my money on, well, the Netherlands, they won the Euros, and I think they're in a good vibe. But I would say Australia with the men.
Okay, I'm just typing that in quick. Netherlands women.
Australia, and I do think we didn't see the best of Belgium at Euros. I think if Belgium...
No, we didn't. But still, I mean, they won a lot over the years, and, you know, they are the team to beat. Eh? Everybody's focusing on Belgium, so that makes it harder for them. And therefore, some other teams might have a role, a bit more underdog role, which might suit them. India is a dark horse. Hey, they are doing really well over the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Just hopefully COVID doesn't rob them of a full-strength squad.
Yeah, well, COVID, I hope it's gone soon.
don't we all? Yeah. Speaking of being gone soon, Tiggs, we know you have some other calls you have to jump onto. So, man, thank you so much for taking the time.
No problem, man. I love to be in the show.
Cheers, Robert.
Fantastic. We love seeing you.
Awesome to talk to you guys.
Next time you're here in South Africa, we will take you for a round of golf and a few years after that.
Yes, probably in December, eh? The week before Christmas, I might come over. Done. Cool. Good to talk to you guys.
Cheers,
thanks
Robert.
Thanks so much. Private.
Thanks, Tiggs.
Okay, cheers, bye, guys. Later. Bye.
You know, I always feel weird, Ty, because I mean, you know a lot of people personally, and it's strange because you refer to them by their nicknames, and I hate doing it myself because nicknames obviously are very personal things. So, cheers, Tiggs. Cheers, Robert. Cheers, Tiggs. Cheers, Robert.
I mean, I literally it's one of my humble brag moments, but I literally am looking at my Amsterdam shirt that he gave and
cool.
I've got here framed and it's signed from Tiggs. So I think it's okay that I can call him that.
No, I mean, of course you can. Look, I give guy nicknames the second after I meet them.
But some of them you can't even read on a podcast,
wouldn't some of them, like 95% of them I can't. I won't give a guy a nickname until I've met them. But, and obviously I haven't met him, but it is quite funny. But yeah, geez, what a legend. What a great guy. And what a great person to interview because he's got stories.
Oh, absolutely. And Derek, when you're here in December and you meet him, you'll get to live some of those stories, and they are fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait to meet him. I can't wait to play golf with him. I can't wait to call him Tiggs. And, I really, really enjoyed that. The 45 minutes flew by. Initially, we were supposed to record it at a different time. He moved it forward by half an hour. And... really, really accommodating of him and saying, like, listen, we've got that much time. And I was actually blown away when you said that's how much time we've got with him. Because usually, and we've done this for a while, and not just with hockey, but pretty much all sports, when you deal with such a high-profile individual, your time is extremely limited. And that wasn't the case now.
Absolutely. And, you know... He's obviously busy planning the transfer window there, replacing Ava. It's not going to be easy, but what a great pleasure. And all we can say is thank you, and we hope you, the listeners, enjoyed it. Closing in on 100. And, of course, there's the Olympic Games coming up, so you're sure to find some great content coming through then.
Oh, I cannot wait. The clocks are ticking. There's another show to go in about 6 or 7 days' time. Ty smashed it out the park once again for another very special episode of Hockey the Podcast. But, like I said, pretty much that applies to every single show that we do these days. And that's not a humble brag. That's just simply a fact. And that's all thanks to my partner in crime, Tyron Jabu-Barnard, doing a sterling job once again in capturing our great guests. Ty, thanks as always. We'll see you in a couple of days' time. Actually, no. I'll see you tomorrow. No, I won't. I'll see you in 2 days' time because you're leaving me in the lurch on the golf course.
Yeah, I don't want to watch Team Herrick destroy somebody else's confidence up close and personally.
But I'll see you at our home of golf, South Africa.
Oh, yeah, Derek. And obviously for all the listeners, by the time you listen to this, Hockey the Magazine Edition 5 is out. It's free. Go check it out. Like it, share it. Make sure our advertisers get bang for their bucks. so that we can keep doing it.
Lovely. Make it happen. Cool. Ty, congratulations on putting that together. Congratulations on putting this podcast together. And I'll see you on the course in a couple of days' time. And I will hear you on our next episode.
Awesome. Cheers. Ciao.